Hi everyone, welcome to the sixth episode of Student Radio Stories. This episode includes an interview with Will Manning. This is a very exciting episode to have got hold of Will Manning to be part of the podcast. Some of you may be thinking, Will Manning? Who's he? And some of you will be thinking, what? Will Manning is in this podcast episode? That's crazy. I know, I'm thinking the same thing. Absolutely crazy to have a big name in the radio industry as part of my podcast series. For those of you that don't know, Will Manning is the presenter of the Big Top 40 and a weekly presenter as part of Capital Radio. We will hear more about his role shortly. Definitely a big deal in the radio industry, as according to the latest Radar figures, Will Manning and the Big Top 40 team have the most listened to chart show in the UK. As mentioned in episode 2 of the podcast, I've also heard Will speak at last year's SRAcon with his Big Top 40 team about how they put together the Sunday evening chart show. Anyway, enough from me, let's get straight into the interview. I'm here with Will Manning. So we know you as a radio presenter on Capital Radio and as the presenter of the Big Top 40 on Sunday evenings. Could you describe to us what it's like working for Capital in these roles?
It is pretty surreal, to be honest. Because I'm on so much, I actually rarely get a moment to stop and think about what it's like. But it is surreal, yeah. Because I've always wanted to do the chart show since I was very, very, very young. And I've been doing that for a year and a half now. And that is just going from strength to strength. So that's incredible. And obviously being on the number one commercial station in the UK is absolutely incredible as well. So I'd say the whole thing is incredible and surreal. It's a dream come true to be on a massive network like that, yeah.
So when do you do your shows? Are you like every day sort of thing?
So on Monday to Friday, I do 10 to 1, mid-morning show on Capital. And then obviously the chart show is Sunday 4 till 7. But there's prep before, so the chart show I get in at 2:30. So there's quite a bit of prep before that. And we're pre-recording interviews in the week as well. So there's always work being done for the chart. And the mid-morning show, I get into work at 8:30 for that. And I'm on air at 10. So it's about an hour and a half of prep before. It's quite a lot of work that goes into all the shows. I mean, the chart show, there's a team of six. So it's a big old production that's put together for that. It's a lot of work.
Could you explain to us some of your student radio journey and how it helped you transition to where you are today?
Well, do you know what? I'm a bit of a fraud because I didn't do that much student radio. That is one of the common misconceptions about me, and everyone thinks I did loads of it, but I actually didn't. I did three shows when I was at Birmingham City University. I can't remember what the radio station was called, but I did three shows there. And then I went to Westminster for my second and third year, and I did maybe about two shows on Smoke Radio. And I was working, the reason being is because I was working for the BBC at the same time. Yeah. And I was working for the Hits Radio. So I was working for the BBC when I was at Birmingham for a bit, for one extra. And then I was working for the Hits Radio when I was at Westminster. So I was kind of already doing the real radio stuff on like big radio stations. So I didn't feel much of a need to do the student radio stuff. I'm weirdly more involved in the student radio life and the student radio stations now I've left uni. So obviously I've hosted the student radio awards. I go to a lot of the talks and the association stuff. So I'm actually more involved in it now. But I always say to people that if you are at a radio station, if you are at a university that's got a radio station, you should 100% get involved in it. Because to be brutally honest, there is minimal ways into the industry these days, and the fact that you've actually got a radio station at university is something you should absolutely take advantage of, because once you've left, the opportunities are much, much smaller. So, and it's scary, isn't it? It's really scary to hear things like that. But if you look at the landscape of radio at the moment, everything's just shrunk. Like, all the stations are national now, the smaller stations are closed down. The local shows are now national shows. So you've got to do your best or enjoy yourself on radio whilst you have the opportunity to do it at uni, because you don't know what's going to happen when you leave. I mean, hopefully it will lead to something, but you just never know. But I would also say you make all your mistakes and do the silly stuff at uni, because once you get to, like, you know, proper real radio, you won't be able to do half of that stuff anymore. So it's a unique position to be in.
So you said you worked for the BBC quite early on. How did you get into these sort of roles?
Yeah, I was very lucky. And if you speak to any presenter, they'll tell you a different route that they had in, because everybody's had a different path. But I started off my career as a DJ primarily. So I was mixing in clubs, doing hip hop and R&B sets. Yeah. And I had a video on Facebook, which a One Extra producer saw. And he asked if I was up for doing a demo for One Extra. And we spent about 6-7 months putting together a demo. And it was like a daytime presenting one, which I'd never really done before. So I was kind of talking about One Extra playlist music instead of talking about, you know, like specialist stuff. So they took me on after about 6 months of demos. They took me on, and I used to do cover when presenters were on holiday or if they were sick. And I did that for about 2 years until they realized I was really not very good. I was really not very good. I was like 15. I was a 15-year-old white kid on a urban music radio station, and it didn't really fly very well. But I learned a lot from that. And I didn't work in radio for about a year and a bit afterwards, and I didn't think it would ever happen again. But then I saw this opportunity to work at the Hits Radio for free. But I pre-recorded it in my room. And I used to go and pre-record it in a London studio as well, which is the same studio that Kiss FM shared. So I made some contacts down the corridor at Kiss, and then I went to Kiss, and it all kind of snowballed into each other. And then obviously I went to Capital. But it was everything I've done has just been seizing opportunities and really good timing.
So how did you get these roles to get you to where you are now?
So the One Extra thing was from a video on Facebook. The Hits Radio thing was an advert I saw advertising online. On like some media website, I saw it, and it was like a radio presenter wanted free. And I was like, do you know what? I'm not on the radio at all, so I've got nothing to lose. And I could literally record it in my family home where I am right now. And I did one Sunday night show a week. And then they asked me to come and do live cover. They were based in Manchester. So I used to drive sometimes to go and do live cover in Manchester. Then they gave me a late show, which was 4 days a week, pre-recorded. That's when I used to go into where Kiss are also based. And I'd done work experience at Kiss the year previously. So I knew some people there already. So I'd go and say hi. The boss knew me. So I was like, oh, I'm doing stuff for the Hits Radio down the corridor now. And he asked to hear my stuff, heard it. And then I was on air at Kiss about a month later as well. So it is just taking advantage of people you meet and situations you might find yourself in. And you kind of just have to hope for the best that they're going to take some form of interest. But obviously, it's taken years and years and years of practice in my bedroom before I even made it on air in the first place. I used to record myself on a karaoke machine. Like, no one was listening, but it was just me learning my craft to myself, which I guess is the same form of, same kind of thing as what people do on student radio. They're learning their craft to maybe one or two listeners. I did that, but in my bedroom with a karaoke machine when I was about 10 years old. Stages, it's all a very long path and a very long road, but it's all added up to me being where I am now. So every little bit of that journey was vital. So even if you leave uni and get a job, it probably won't be your first one in radio. You know, it probably won't be your last one in radio. You'll probably move on to a numerous different stations, hopefully. You just sort of find your feet along the way.
Yeah, definitely. Lots of stepping stones. And from the events that I've been to, like, networking has definitely helped getting to know people in the industry and keeping them as your contacts.
Yeah. And it's not about hounding, because people make the mistake of relentlessly emailing presenters or producers. I mean, don't forget, as a presenter, I'm actually powerless. Like, people will send me their demos, which is fine, because I'm happy to give feedback when I have the time to. But people make the mistake, I'm not the person that can put you on air. I'm a presenter. The bosses have complete power and stuff like that. So there's only so much people like myself can do and producers can do, but it's definitely worth making friends in the right way with people in the industry, because you never know. And so, you know what, Katie, you'll probably work with me one day. Do you know what I mean? Like, the radio industry is such a small place. You just never know what's going to happen. You never know who's going to be your boss one day. I never thought I'd work at Capital. I used to be friends with someone who is, I was friends with someone who is now my boss at Capital. And I never thought he'd be my boss. So you just never know what's going to happen. the industry is such a small place. So I would always say, never annoy anyone, because you never know when you're going to see them again.
Yeah, I've also interviewed Lauren Moore for this podcast, and she was like telling me she's fresh out of university and straight into working for the BBC. So she got really lucky there, and she's got to know you as well. And like, it's one of those things, she'll recognise you at events and you'll just like know each other. So you'll just nod at each other.
Yeah, it is that. I see faces when I go to student conferences and the awards. I always see the same faces, and it's amazing to see like some people from 3 years ago just start at uni, and then last year maybe like win Best Male, for example. I remember this guy called Sam has done that, and it's incredible. You know, you can really seize the opportunity if you do it the right way.
So if you had to pick a moment from it throughout your student radio, well, your radio career in general, what would you say was your highlight?
There's so many, because the thing is, along that, all those stepping stones, they were all highlights, because every time it was reaching something new, it was getting closer to my dream.
Yeah.
But I think in recent times, the highlight was getting off of the chart show, because that's been a childhood dream of mine. And I get the biggest guests in the world on the show every week. It's such a tradition in radio to do the chart, so that's an honor. So for me, that's like the dream come true, getting to the chart. Yeah, and this billboard, so it's just all very cool. It's all very, very cool. I love it.
Would you say you've always wanted to be part of the global company, and was Capital like your ultimate goal for radio?
Do you know what, it's weird, it changes. Well, it changed when I was younger. I used to be obsessed with Kiss. Like, all I ever wanted to do was have a mix show on Kiss, which is because I was a hip-hop DJ. So my aim was only to have one show a week on Kiss. And someone was like, you know, you're probably going to earn about £100. And I was like, because I just had this image that radio presenters earn millions of pounds. So I just had no idea. So I opened up my eyes a little bit. So once I got to Kiss, that was like a tick in the box. I've listened to Kiss all my life on the school bus and whatever. But I also used to listen to Capital a lot when I was really, really young, and my mum would drive me to school. So it's such a staple, especially if you live in London. People grow up listening to Capital. So when they poached me over from Bauer to Global, it's a real step up. I mean, Bauer's a really cool company to work for if you want to work for the right brands, but Global are just world renowned for being the most polished radio business in the world. They don't do things by halves. Like, you know, our events are world famous for being the best ever. Our studios are the best in the world. People come over from iHeart in America and look at our studios and are like, you know, we wish we had what you had. They are the best in the world, Global. There's no doubt about it when it comes to commercial radio. It's definitely a dream. Like, it's a dream. It's an absolute dream and an honour to work for Global, for sure.
Yeah, I was lucky enough last year to get a tour of Global with some people from in my studio, because we just had some networking and we knew some people. So they let us come look around, and it was pretty crazy to see like just the tower that is Global in London.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? It's really, really mad. Do you know the crazy thing for me as well is that on my 10th birthday, there used to be what was called the Capital Cafe below. And because I was obsessed with radio, my mum and dad took me to the Capital Cafe for my 10th birthday. And I just couldn't believe that I was eating dinner below Capital. And now I walk into that building every single day. So it's, like I said, you never know what's going to happen. It's kind of crazy. But it's a cool building, isn't it? Those studios are insane. Did you see all the Capital ones and the Heart ones?
Yeah, I got to like sit in one of the Heart studios and sort of take some pictures there. It was really nice.
Yeah, they're amazing. They are absolutely amazing. Yeah, it's very lucky.
So what drew you to wanting a career in radio?
For me, it's the one-on-one that you get with people. It's very special to have that connection. And it's something, I want to work in TV, but it's something you'll never get on TV. You'll never just get that one-on-one contact, because it feels and sounds like you're talking to one person if it's done right. There's so many people that don't do that right, but obviously if you do it right, that's how it should be done. And obviously you're sat in a room on your own and you have no concept of where people are listening, how they're listening, how many people are listening, until you get that interaction back on a text or a tweet or a phone call.
Yeah.
And then when you can hear and see how people are getting involved with your show and how your show might impact their day, that's when it hits you and you're like, okay, wow, this is actually changing someone's mood. Especially at the moment, radio is playing such an important role in keeping people going during this lockdown. You know, people can make playlists whenever they want on Spotify with no human interaction or interruption, but they're choosing to turn to radio because they want that human contact, because they're not getting that at the moment from friends or family. So that is the importance of radio. That is the power of it. It's just one-on-one human contact. You can tell them something they probably don't know. You can bring them their favorite artist. You can play them their favorite song. You can play them new music. You can make them laugh. You can make them cry. You can bring on a listener with a story that's going to change someone's day. You just never know. It's very special. You can do so many things with it. I'm very passionate about it. I don't know if you can tell. I absolutely love it. Biggest radio geek you'll meet.
How would you say the pandemic has it changed your sort of radio career in any way? How have you adapted maybe as being part of Capital?
Well, at first it was all a little bit unknown, and as I think it was for everyone doing everything, we weren't really sure how we should be talking or what we should be doing. But then we realised very quickly that people were, like I said before, turning to us for comfort.
Yeah.
And a sense of normality as well, because obviously if people have us on for their routine, a drive to work, drive back from work, or maybe during their lunch break, people still want us there when things aren't normal, just so they can feel like things are. So I think we very quickly realised that actually we need to crack on and just do what we do best. Like, people are relying on us. Obviously, we tweak our language. I think there was a point where every day our language was changing based on what the mood of the nation was. And you can quite quickly get a vibe of that just by going on Twitter. You can get a vibe of, where are people's heads at today? Like, how do they want to be spoken to? What do they not want to hear? Because obviously you've got so much news going on and the word coronavirus is being thrown around constantly. Do they really want to hear more about that? Okay, let's move away from that for now. We'll bring them something a bit more lighter and we'll let the news do the rest of it. I think at the moment, it's the new normal, isn't it? So I think we're kind of back to where we were pre-lockdown in a weird way with our language. We just kind of adapted, and this is just how things are now. It's the new normal for life for now. But yeah, we did have to take special care and attention as to what we were saying and how we were saying it. It took a lot of thought every day.
In terms of like the top 40, how have you adapted that? Because you must have had to change the style of interviews you do when you have the artists on.
Yeah, it's weird because I mentioned that we pre-record a lot. So we have stuff in the bank for weeks that we, you know, maybe don't play out. So we had, I remember there was a point where we were in lockdown. I think it was the first week of lockdown and the first chart in lockdown. And we had an interview with Tiny Temper, I think, that we'd pre-recorded maybe 3 weeks before, and he was in the studio. And obviously, if we played it out, people would be like, why are you in a studio with another human? Like, why is Tiny Temper in the building? So we played it out as clips, and we were honest and open and said, this is pre-recorded before the lockdown.
Yeah.
So once we got all those pre-records out of the way, all of our chats are now on Zoom. So I was with Katy Perry the other morning doing exactly what you and I are doing. Demi Lovato the other day, like you and I are doing. We're all on Zoom or all on FaceTime. This is how we're doing it. And I've got my chart mic here. Do you like how I just brought that in? That was so smooth. So I'm doing a lot of my interviews in my bedroom. If they're in LA, I'm waking up at like 5 a.m. and just literally jumping out of bed and sitting in this chair to speak to them. Or if they're in New York, we're doing them in the evenings. And then we'll revoice them and re-video them when I'm in the studio. So we get mic quality, and I'm in the global studios. So we'll redo all of that. There's so much that goes into those interviews, though. It's crazy.
So you're still traveling sort of into London to go to the studios. You're not like working from home.
I did one show from home and I absolutely hated it and it sounded rubbish. So now I'm going into the studio, and it's a bit of sanity for me. It kind of breaks my day up.
Yeah.
It's quite nice. I really feel for everybody that's just having to work from home, because I would go crazy. And the thing is, the radio as well, because I'm such a control freak, I want to press the buttons, I want to move the faders, I want to have all the things in front of me on my screen. So I like to drive the show. I don't like people doing it for me.
What advice would you give to those wanting a career in the radio industry?
Katie, that is a tough question. what would you want the answer to be? What do you think the answer would be? What have people said? I'm intrigued, because like I said before, it's so tough now.
I mean, from the other interviews I've had, people have said, don't give up. It's the sort of thing, you are going to get rejected. Just keep trying, keep making demos. If you're in student radio, people have said, definitely go to conference and learn that way from the evening events like Demo Factor. You can then listen to other people's demos.
Yeah, all of that. Crafting the perfect demo is the number one thing. I get sent 10-minute demos. I'm like, I don't have 10 minutes to listen to your demo. I'm really sorry. Make it 2.5 minutes long and give me the best bits. Cut out the rubbish. Honestly, like, you've just got to be honest. You've just got to cut out the waffle. Give me something about yourself. Give me a funny story. Give me some music passion, and give that to me in 2.5 minutes, if not less, if possible. And then when you've made one demo, make another one and just keep being self-critical. I would also say self-belief is completely, is very powerful, because if you don't believe in yourself, then no one else is going to believe in yourself. So confidence in your ability is number one, because you can hear that in radio. If someone's not confident behind a mic, you're just not going to be able to carry a show. So confidence, self-belief, and just, yeah, keep on making those demos and learn what kind of presenter you want to be. You might make a demo for someone like Capital and realize that you can't pull it off because you're not passionate about it. Maybe you want to do something that's more One Extra or Capital Extra, or, you know, just, you know, find your groove, find out who you are as a personality and a presenter before you present it to anybody else. And that might take you years, to be honest. And that's why I'm saying uni is a great time to work that out at uni, on uni radio, when no one's really listening, and make the most of those studios, you know, pre-record your demos and maybe do one for loads of different stations and work out which one sounds or feels more like you. And then when you leave, hopefully you'll be ready to present yourself to the big bad radio industry. But yeah, don't give up. Obviously don't give up, because it is a tough industry. But if I gave up, then I wouldn't be on the radio. So, you know, there's got to be another one of me somewhere. I'm not going to be on radio forever. I will be on radio forever. I won't be on Capital forever. So, you know, there's got to be another personality coming up from somewhere. So yeah, keep on doing it, and definitely go to the conferences as well. As brutal as Demo Factor is, they speak the truth when they criticize those demos and critique them. So definitely worth getting involved with.
What would you say if you weren't part of student radio, if you didn't go to a university, then what would you say could alternatively work to help you get into the industry?
I think the best thing you can do is buy a microphone, plug it into your Mac, and do demos that way and pretend you're on the radio like I used to do. I think that's the only way, really, because obviously hospital radio is not really a thing. Community stations, if you can find one near you, but they're few and far between as well. I mean, do a podcast is good, a music podcast. I did that for about 10 years. I used to do a music podcast on iTunes every single week. It was like an hour-long music show. Before I was ever on radio, that was what I was doing as well. But I think, yeah, buy a mic and just plug it in and just, like, learn who you are as a voice. Learn how to use your voice as a tool. It's very important.
Yeah. So I'd say I have some experience in podcasting, but for other people, if they were thinking about it to make it, like, professional, I mean, mine definitely isn't professional. It's just a little sort of project. It's nice to get the big names in there, but what would you give, like, sort of tips on podcasting?
Don't make them too long. Think about where people are going to be listening to them. So don't make them too long is my main one. You've got to think about where people are going to be listening to these. Are they going to be on a commute? How long is the average commute? How are you going to engage people? How many people are you doing it with? You don't want too many voices, because that's going to get really confusing. And keep them interesting. I've heard so many podcasts that are just drag and become really boring. So have a focus point, like, go into that podcast knowing exactly what you want to get out of it at the end of it. They're my main tips, to be completely honest. It depends what kind of podcast you're going to be doing, but have a focus is definitely the main one, and know when to move things along. It's like a radio show. You just got to, you know, get to the meat, get to the good bit.
I think that's everything. Thank you for being part of my podcast, Will, and getting in touch with me.
Oh, you're welcome. Good luck with it all.
A big thank you to Will for letting me interview you for my podcast and sharing your radio journey and tips with me to help those wanting to go into the radio industry. Definitely someone to listen to on the radio and look out for in the radio industry. Stay tuned for more student radio stories to come. Bye, everyone!